Stand by for action.
Gamer's Haven Special Edition.
Welcome back to the Gamer's Haven Podcast. This is Ethan. And this is the next series in our series of interviews, and I managed to sit down over Skype with Christopher McLaughlin, a freelancer for Green Ronin Press, or Green Ronin Publishing, rather. And he's done quite a lot of work with Green Ronin and some various other companies, so please enjoy the interview.
Noble Knight Games has been serving the needs of thousands of gamers worldwide since 1997. With a huge selection of over 30,000 unique products, including discounts on most in-print games of up to 50% off or more. Noble Knight Games is the place for out-of-print RPGs, board games, war games, collectible card games, miniatures, and all things game-related. They ship worldwide and will purchase or trade your titles you no longer need, new, or used. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. Just visit www.noblenight.com or visit our website for direct access to thousands of new, out-of-print, and in some cases, one-of-a-kind items. This is Ethan with the Gamer's Haven Podcast, and you're joining me here with another interview in round two. Follow-up to our interview last week, we had Monty Cook, and this week we have Christopher McLaughlin. So you're following a heavy hitter, Chris. So we'll see. This should be entertaining, right? No pressure.
No pressure.
But yeah, I'm here with Christopher McLaughlin, who's a freelance RPG writer and designer, right?
Yes, sir.
Just want to make sure I got getting your titles correct. And where are you currently located at?
I'm currently in Manassas, Virginia, near the northerners your audience would recognize as the Bull Run Battlefield. I'm within walking distance of it.
We're
in the DC metro area.
Okay, my brother used to live out in Fairfax, so.
Oh, wow, okay. Yeah, we're in that part of the country.
He used to work for, Mythic Entertainment. They did computer games. The Warhammer Online. That's what they did. So, yeah, he lived out there for about 5 years. So I've actually been out there. So that's cool.
Oh, okay.
From what he tells me, when snow starts falling, people go a little crazy out there. So you're under... 12, 13 feet of snow now, right? Or
I lost count after the first couple of feet. After that, it just all sort of blended together.
When the Eskimos started coming down, and the you put away the dogs, and they started handing out spotlights and stuff. It's been a pretty nasty winter this year for everybody, I think.
If you say so, we're such navel gazers here in the DC area. Uh-huh. We just sort of magnify it, whatever happens to us. And the fact that we actually have a legitimate gripe about this winter just sort of exacerbated that.
Yes. And you are a teacher. You are a social studies teacher, you said?
Yes. I've been doing that now for a scary 14 years.
Excellent.
And that's I'll turn 41 in a couple weeks, and I'm still getting used to the notion I've been doing anything for 14 years.
And you have quite the alphabet soup behind your name as well, don't you?
Well, I got talked into getting a master's degree at Radford, and I think that was mainly them trying to separate me from more of my financial aid funds. But I have it for better or worse, and I figure, hey, it cost me several grand. I might as well get something out of the initials, right?
Hey, there is that. I'm on my way. I'm in pre-law right now, so I think I'll eventually get an ESQ behind my name, maybe.
Ah,
so.
Okay, all right. You don't think you're going to go the Steve Long route and leave it for the good, honest field of game writing?
Oh, well, you know, if when the game money starts coming in, the fat podcast money starts rolling in, we'll see. We've been doing this show for 3 years now, and we're still waiting for the fat, dump trucks of money. And I think they keep getting lost. They can't find us here in Kansas.
Yes. You know, there's a legend among us freelancers, and it actually proved to be true when we got to visit with him, that Steve Long has a motivational poster right next to the computer he writes all his game stuff on, and it says, "Just remember, you might have to go back to law." It says he looks at that whenever he needs to get like another 10,000-20,000 words done in a hurry, and that's all he needs to keep him going.
Well, for the benefit of our listeners, who is Steve Long?
Steve Long writes about 50% of the words produced by the entire gaming industry. He puts out the vast majority of stuff that Hero Games puts out. I couldn't write gibberish as fast as Steve writes top-notch, well-researched, just absolutely fantastic RPG stuff, and it's he is a well-known legend for being one of the top guys for being able to get something really huge done really well, really, really, really fast. And I'm preaching to the choir if you're a Hero Games fan. I mean, you sure.
I played a lot of Champions back in the day, so as far as my quick little intro here is I started gaming with the Marvel Super Heroes role-playing game and then moved on to Champions. So I've always been a superhero guy. And judging by your sordid past, you've also been a bit of a superhero guy.
Well, it's something I fell back into in college. What a great time for it when you've got all that time and you got all that government money, and you can just let your inbox fill up with, whatever's coming out.
Exactly.
And I got into comics back in 92. And honestly, if it hadn't been for Sandman Mystery Theater, I never would have got it through grad school.
Yeah.
And it was funny. I was in my mid-20s. I'm taking these, graduate level classes, and I'm sneaking comics into class like a naughty second grader. It was really, really funny. And, it got to be one title after another. And just before I knew it, the comics were, sort of pushing the clothes and everything else out of the house. So, yeah. And, it's been great that, I've been blessed enough to have the opportunity to put some of that, one argument spent time and energy into something productive and useful. And my wife is making the money sign at me right now. Yes, dear. Yes, dear. The money as well.
Well, there's that whole thing of, paying rent or mortgages and all that crazy stuff.
I managed to keep doing that at the same time. My priorities never quite got that out of whack. But man, oh, man, oh, man, I have a lot of titles that, it's almost like alcoholics. You keep waking up in bed with people you don't remember ever meeting. It's kind of like that man in my comic collection. Like, oh, my God, when did I ever get deep into the Freedom Fighters? Where did these come from?
Yeah, I had to take a step back from comic book stuff a long time ago when I looked at it and was like, wait a second, did I buy this already? Wait, I've already got three of these. What? Oh. It's at that point where you realize you have to, put it into a database or something. All right, okay. Well, let's go. Speaking of your sordid past, let's go back to the beginning. How did you get into our wonderful hobby of the wonderful gaming hobby that we all love?
This is always a funny question for me to answer because I usually get it from people who are looking to break into the industry, mm-hmm. and I really, really wish I had a more useful answer to it. But the God honest truth is, I just happened to be blessed enough to have the guy who ran my local game store mm-hmm. just happen to start an RPG company.
Nice.
And that was Shane Hensley, who used to run the best and eventually mm-hmm. only comics and game shop in the New River Valley area between Virginia Tech and Radford. So Shane pretty much knew everything I was reading and the games I was into, and eventually I worked up the courage I was Gen Con 97. I went up to him, tried to steal my nerve, and still wound up sounding like the teenage kid that keeps swapping up on The Simpsons.
Uh-huh.
So it came out like, Mr. Hensley, can I write a book for you? And he said, sure, I know you got good taste. And Shane gave me my start, and it just sort of snowballed from there. And just, wow, I mean, Shane, you know, in some ways, I think he may be, you know, almost in some ways like the Roger Corman of our industry, because yeah. he's given a chance to so many people who had nothing other than enthusiasm and persistence going for them. And, you know, I'm speaking of one of many who owe a lot to Shane for giving us that first big break.
Sure, sure. So that's how you got into actually writing. What got
yes.
you into actually gaming?
Well, wow, that goes all the way back to seventh grade, being in Southwest Virginia, where a really, really good friend of mine, still one of the hippest guys I've ever known, Matthew Cook, came and into class one day with a copy of the original purple box set of D&D. At the time, I was a raging mythology nut.
Nice.
And, you know, tapping into, you know, some of that mythic power. And, you know, that kind of piqued my interest a little bit. And then later on, wandering through a Walden Books, looking at this D&D game that my friend Matt was raving about, mm-hmm. I saw the original deities and demigods.
Ooh.
And I just picked it up as a straight mythology reference. And it took me about a month before I started really wondering what all those numbers were about.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, you know, that led down the wayward path, just like some kid in like some 30s anti-marijuana film, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, oh, well, the other kids are taking these puffs, and, you know, next thing you know, I'm killing somebody with an axe, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
well, so that was,
and, well,
you,
it was,
so that was you in Reefer Madness. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was me. That was me. And it was gaming in the 80s. You know, people were convinced sure. that was going to be the next step anyway.
Oh, of course. Yeah, well, you know, so your next step was obviously exploring steam tunnels and whatnot. So.
Well, you know, I'm from Southwest Virginia, so, you know, it's coal mines down there. We got plenty of opportunities.
Yeah, we're out in Kansas, so we don't have many steam tunnels out here, I'm afraid. So, we had to figure out other things to do, so we just sit and watch the tornadoes go back and forth, you know, and marvel at indoor plumbing.
Oh yeah, my good friend John Fithian is from your part of the woods, and he's the guy who actually taught me the Fujita scale.
I know John. So,
good.
I know John. Actually, I'm originally from Lawrence, so and that's where.
Oh.
Out. So I mean I've met a lot of the that crew, so small world, huh?
Yeah, well, gaming, it surely is.
Oh yeah, it's one of the things we about our show is we really want to, you know, increase the awareness of how great the hobby is and whatnot. So
yeah.
Now you got into writing. Was the Shane Hensley, was that your first writing assignment, or had you written stuff before that?
That was the first thing that I wasn't doing for a grade.
Ah,
yes. Yeah. I other than that, the closest thing I'd done to that was our college role playing guild put out a monthly newsletter, and we sort of did like our own little among the 30 of us kind of dragonish magazine, and I ran that thing for about two or three years. Memory is fading at this point.
Sure.
But, you know, it just, it's funny, you know, out of that one little thing, being put out by these 30 people at Radford University, I got into the industry eventually out of that. The guy who ran the magazine before me got published in Dragon a number of times.
Mm-hmm.
And Hal Mangold, who's now doing art and layout for Green Ronin.
Yeah,
you know, he was my assistant at one point. So, you know, there's like this incredible percentage of people in the industry from this one tiny little obscure publication. I'm sure if we ever hit it big, somebody will whip out their copies and embarrass the living daylights out of us.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the ultimate, you know, thing for that those are for. So,
you know, seeing, you know, our terrible Greyhawk ripoffs and all the things you do when you're first trying to learn how to write to any skill or degree. And,
but I think about every gamer goes through some sort of a phase like that, though. So, I know we bunch of my friends and I got together years upon years upon years ago and threw together some cyberpunk like game. I mean, it was awful. Oh, it was bad, but you know, it's part of what makes this hobby so great, I think.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, well, I mean, it's just the way that it sort of it asks everybody to pitch in creatively. And, you know, just that the fact that there's so much of you in it, even if you're just showing up and playing every week. And that's
sure.
great. I mean, you just don't get that out of anything else.
Oh yeah. And what was that book that you ended up doing for Shane?
The book that I wound up doing for him it was Tales of Terror 1877. It was back in the, you know, when Metaplot was all the rage, and we were going to push the Deadlands timeline ahead a year.
Yeah.
And I wound up co-writing that book with John Hoppler, Steve Long, and Matt Forbeck, because I remember the running gag was me being in that four was, oh, I'm Ringo.
No.
You know, being in there with like three other top-notch guys, I just, you know, total I'm not worthy situation. But it seemed to go well because they asked me back to do that book, and then another and another and another. Next thing I know, like, wow, I'm actually a game writer now.
Yeah. Yeah, and I actually have that book on my shelf still.
Oh, God bless you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yes, I do. Anyone who listens to our show knows we do a Deadlands campaign. So Deadlands is – I remember back in what was that? 90, you said that was 97, so 97, 98?
Yeah, started on 97, got published in 98.
Okay. And that was back when Deadlands was just the steamrolling out there. Is that the year it won an Origins Award?
It was not too long after that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember, because those were around the first couple Gen Cons I went to, so. I remember the Tales of Terror. When it came out, it sort of collected a lot of the, basically gave you a focal point for a lot of stuff. It was great. What did you move on to after you did Tales of Terror? What was the next in line for you?
Well, the next thing that came out was they transitioned over to Hal Mangold's time as a line developer, and Hal did a lot of like really offbeat stuff, including the Back East books, and then he wound up farming out those two books between five different writers, and me and Steve Long and Ken Height wound up doing the South book.
Oh, excellent.
And that was the next thing I did.
I do notice that your handle is Canadian States of America Badass.
it's actually a very, 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 very old in joke, because like one of the first big industry connections I made was I found out that me and a bunch of other guys I knew from the business had all been following professional wrestling to one degree or another. So my old line developer at West End, Fred Yant, put together a group called the New Gamers Order, and it started out as this tremendous joke where we could talk about gaming and pro wrestling.
And wrestling and fans forget that one.
Yeah, and Fred decreed at the time that everybody must have their own like in ring handle. And they were coming up with like some terrible ones for me. I mean, it was just, oh my God, I've got to come up with something better than this before any of them stick.
Yes.
And at the time the Undertaker, you know, they were trying to repackage like the 40-year-old Undertaker as like the wrestling Fred Durst.
Yeah,
and
he was American Badass. Yes.
The American Badass. And I do Civil War reenacting on the side. So I said, well, if he's the American Badass, I'm the Confederate Badass.
I was really into wrestling back then, so yes.
Yeah, it showed.
They started using the Limp Bizkit song with him. That's, yeah,
oh,
I remember
God,
that.
Yeah.
I remember that. It started out, we're totally going off on tangents, but I don't care. but they started using out the Kid Rock song,
yeah,
Badass on it. Oh man, that was when I got to see that. I got to see that live at Survivor Series 2000. I was down in Florida visiting a friend. We went down there. So, oh wow.
So
that's your wrestling handle.
Yeah, and it stuck. I knew it stuck when people that weren't on the list started calling me that. You know, it got to be a little creepy there after a while, but I wound up using it for like my email just for the heck of it, figuring like, you know, people would either be going, what the heck is this, or like people going, oh, I get it.
Excellent.
So yeah, that's where it comes from.
That's fantastic.
Oh,
so you did your work on at least some of the Deadlands stuff. What other systems have you moved on to since then?
Well, I worked for
you mentioned West End Games.
Yeah, I worked on their DC Universe line for a good long while, sadly, about half of what I wrote for them never got published because the license got pulled while we had we had like three or four source books in various stages of completion. Like we had a Flash source book that had already gone through layout.
Oh yeah! Wow.
Yeah, and you know, unfortunately, like half of that never even got seen by anybody other than, you know, us and, you know, the editors. And then right in the middle of that, I'd been like I said, I'd known Hal Mangold for 20 years, and through him, I got to meet a bunch of the other Green Ronin people. And you know, right around 2002, there was this thing like, hey, you know, we're going to do a D20 superhero game. And you know, me, you know, with my track record, I immediately predicted, oh, you know, who's going to buy that?
Oh yeah.
And then they sent me these two really, really bulky Word files, and for something called Mutants and Masterminds. They want to know if I wanted to write the first adventure for it. And I figure, okay, well, you know, it could be fun. We'll do a neat little superhero story, and then we'll try to make this D20 superhero thing work around it. Well, I actually sat down and read what Steve Vincent had come up with, and you know that you go through these moments in your life, you know, when you meet your one true love, you know, everything gets all, you know, hatey and fuzzy, and you start
Dreamweaver starts playing.
Yeah, you know, exactly. Yeah. You know, it's almost exactly like it is in the movies. Well, that's how it was for in the M&M. I mean, because I'd already been at it for like 5 or 6 years, and that's the first time I've ever enjoyed doing stat blocks. Yeah, you know, that's a rare, rare thing in this industry, especially if you've done a lot of D20 stuff, as I had at that point.
I completely know where you're coming from. Big Mutants and Masterminds fans we are, so.
And I got to meet Steve, and thankfully the two of us hit it off immediately. Excellent. You know, and he was nice enough to throw me work that really hit my strengths and my interests, and you know, and now Steve has stepped down. I'm working with John Lighthizer. I hope I said that right. If not, I guess my career is at an end. John and I did the Silver Age book together, and
excellent.
You're really, really, really excited about the future of M&M.
Excellent, excellent. M&M is a fantastic system, and our listeners might not immediately recognize your name, but I bet you if you go and look at some of the books on your shelf, you're probably going to see your name in a few of them. Mm-hmm. Most notably, for Mutants and Masterminds, there's the Time of Crisis.
Yes.
I sort of was looking and going, that was Christopher McLaughlin. Wow, okay. What can you tell me about the design? That was the really one of the first like M&M major adventures that they put out, if memory serves me.
Oh, that was the first adventure we put out. Like I said, that was one of the three original books that were planned, because Kenson had Freedom City as a setting like years before we actually did M&M, and then we knew we were going to do the rule system, we're going to publish his setting, and then the thought was we need an adventure, and I was just blessed enough to have that fall into my lap, and it's just, I said, okay, all right, here's my tribute to what I've always loved the best about comics, a good old-fashioned Julius Schwartz, parallel worlds, you know, crisis type thing. And
you put Nazis in there.
Of course. You have to do the world where the Nazis won World War II. It's a given.
Exactly. And I always, you know, rack my brains and, you know, ask my players, like, is there anything really wrong with beating up Nazis? I got nothing, really. You know. And an adventure where you do it as a superhero where you can, you know, throw them to the moon or something is, hey.
Well, you know, you get to beat up Nazis. You know, it's got monkeys in it. It's everything I've loved about comics over the years. So, and
you can really see that in the stuff that the superhero stuff you've worked on, especially that. And I'm glad to hear that you've been working on the Silver Age book. It sounds like you come from a good background on comics, and you really understand sort of the meat of it. For us fans.
Oh, well, you know, another opportunity I've been able to do that for Golden and for the Golden Age book and for Silver Age is just, you know, if there's one strength I think I have in the classroom, it's just being able to find the humor in what I'm teaching and to, you know, try to make the kids laugh while I'm making them learn something, you know, kind of tricking them into learning it. And just the ability to bring that to comics history you know, that was a lot of fun, and we got a really good response on it from what we did with Golden Age. And it's just, Silver Age is basically me using that same kind of smart alecky tone, just talking about a different era.
Sure.
So I think the people who liked it in Golden Age will hopefully appreciate it just as much in Silver.
Excellent, excellent. Well, speaking of Silver Age, let's do what we need to do here.
Okay.
What can you tell us about Silver Age? Do you know when it's coming out quite yet?
I am told that it just went to the press this week, so hopefully the PDF will be out very, 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 very soon. And right along with it, we're also doing an original PDF adventure from that era.
Ooh, and excellent.
Yeah, it's going to be our first original adventure in a while, and yeah. In best Stan Lee tradition, it is the day the Dread Destructus.
Excellent.
Yeah. Thank you. And yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to see how people react to that, because I figure if you've read enough of those 60s Marvel comics, mm-hmm. hopefully there'll be a lot of gotcha moments that you're going like, oh, I totally know where he got that from. And maybe it'll just be, you know, I hope it'll be good fun on its own terms, but for the people that really know that era, I think there'll be a lot of Easter eggs and things in there like that for them.
Well, how do you approach a writing assignment when it's given to you, typically?
It really depends on the company that you work for. They've all got their own little sets of rules for that. With Mutants and Masterminds, for instance, I've always been blessed by getting these tremendous outlines from Steve Kenson. Mm-hmm. Steve has a lot of gifts, and one of them is just the ability to instantly nail what needs to be in a particular book. Otherwise, I would have spent a lot more nights just curled up in a fetal position crying, thinking, how am I going to distill the entire Silver Age down to just 120 pages? But, wow, you know, it's like anytime you're lost, anytime you don't know what do you leave in, what do you leave out, there's always Steve's outline to pull you through. And it's just me trying to throw on enough smart aleck and enough funny to make it fun for the people who shell out, you know, $25-$30 for it. And you know, but Steve gave you such a great spine to work from. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I really have to give him credit for the job he did on M&M.
Excellent, excellent. And as a going into freelancing, is that what you exclusively do, other than obviously your day job, your teacher job and whatnot?
Yeah.
And you work? Do you work specifically just most of the time with Green Ronin, or?
Well, that's rather the way that it's worked out. I'm always on the lookout for new projects and things like that, but the Green Ronin people have kept me busy the last few years, and you know, I've been very, very, very happy there. But you know, I'm always on the lookout for other opportunities, and I've done a lot of oddball, fun little projects like that. Like, oh well, here we go. We can indulge our wrestling vices again. When Comic Images put out their WWE game,
right.
I drew the short straw. I was the guy who had to explain the rules of wrestling.
Oh God.
I remember, I don't know if it made the final cut, but there was like a paragraph where I was like actually trying to convince people there are actually rules in wrestling, you know. So I have that on my resume, for better or for worse. I think if I ever go for my PhD, I'll put that out there front and center.
Yes, World Wrestling Entertainment game.
Yeah, that was me. I'm talking to some people about doing some stuff for some other companies. But you know, gosh, I mean, the opportunity write for great people like John Lighthizer and the Ronins. Sure. You know, just, you know, I try to make myself available to them because I know it's going to be something fun and something that people are going to dig. I mean, we Green Ronin people were blessed by a tremendously, very insanely dedicated group of fans who, knowing how they're going to react to something I write, that's a great inducement to keep coming back and doing more and more and more for that company.
So is Mutants and Masterminds your absolute favorite system out there?
For superheroes, yes. Recently, I don't know if anything has moved me more than Spirit of the Century. Mm. That's just an insanely good system. I don't get to game much myself because, you know, teaching just sort of eats your life for 9 months out of the year, but mm-hmm. that's the one that really, really, really makes me wish I could just, you know, chuck it all and just run a full-time campaign kind of like I did in college.
Right.
You know, really, that's the one I'm really sorry I missed during my really hardcore gaming days. Really, such good work there.
Yeah, and I know we've... we've done a little bit with Spirit of the Century. The thing that we love about it is the character creation.
Oh yes, genius.
And we just want basically sat down and because you can actually get the character creation stuff for free off of the Evil Hat website. And we love to have been wanting to sit down and actually use that type of character creation for D&D for Mutants and Masterminds would be fantastic. You know.
Oh yeah, that would be awesome. That would be a lot of fun.
So, I mean, that's definitely what lends itself to that. Real quick on you are an educator, so you do.
Yes.
You teach.
Yes.
Do you use any kind of gaming stuff in education right now?
Not particularly, but I have always been very, very grateful for the time that I spent game mastering because I've always thought that's the absolute best teacher training you could possibly ever have. Because if you're game mastering, it's you trying to hold 6, 8, 10 very different people's attention and keep them focused on something, basically just using your words, your gestures, and whatever props you're able to sneak in. And, you know, to tell you the truth, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, I come in and game master a game of, you know, American government, you know, 3 or 4 sessions a day. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, the skills I picked up gaming, they've really paid off for me, you know, but, you know, just, you know, gosh, if I could ever find a way to tie M&M into American government, oh, I would totally do that. You know, maybe I should talk up Lighthizer about doing, you know, like a supplement, like, you know, what's government like in M&M. Although that may be we sort of have this joke dump file that Nicole Lindrus coined. It's kind of like M&M year 10 scraping the bottom of the barrel. You know, that's where we put all our joke projects, like, you know, like our Guide to Romance comics and, you know, the Book of Erotic M&M, you know. Oh. Various oh. You know, various other gag projects that we have.
Very,
you know?
That's a very bad image.
Yeah.
Although if
yeah,
it came
that's always good for a groan when we're at cons or something.
The problem is, though, with a lot of things, with me, if it came out from Green Ronin, I'd probably buy it. Just based it's from Green Ronin. Like, and I have to buy it.
This is why our Green Ronin fans are the best. I did a designer's journal thing for Silver Age, and I jokingly mentioned that we're getting ready to do something called Hunks and Heartbreakers, our Guide to Romance Comics. And I kid you not, within like 3 hours, there's a thread on our message board talking about, you know, I know that was intended as a joke, but by gosh, I'd buy that book. I love these people. I love our fans. They are awesome.
Well, you know, not just their staff writers and not just Green Ronin in general, speaking as far as you and their freelancers, I think you guys do good stuff. So,
well, thank you.
I know we're huge. Anyone who listens to our show knows that we're horrible, 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 horrible prostitutes for Green Ronin Publishing. So,
thank you.
Entirely do it for free too. So, is superhero the superhero genre your favorite, or do you have something else that you have a passion for?
That's probably the biggest passion that I have, just uh-huh. because, you know, especially the older that I get, the more I appreciate the freedom that you can do within the superhero genre, because it's so flexible. There's so many different things that you can shoehorn into this idea with superpowers.
Right.
You know, it has that same kind of flexibility. Like during the 90s, it seems like, you know, there was this race to come out with like as many and magic RPGs as you could. Deadlands was kind of, you know, cowboys and magic.
Yeah.
Although they pushed the zombies up front more than that, more so, you know, justifiably so. But still, it's cowboys and magic. And I remember not too long you had Seventh Sea, which was basically pirates and magic.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, it's like it's, you know, superheroes, it gives you that exact kind of flexibility. You know, I mean, it's just—it's funny. I will get weird ideas for games, and, you know, just they will sooner or later the idea of putting superpowers in there immediately creeps into it. It just seems to be my default setting now.
Well, you know, you being in the Confederate States, you know, we're now waiting for the Civil War superhero book. So, yeah.
Well, we did that. We did that actually. If you saw our Worlds of Freedom book,
oh, that's right, it was in there. Wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I was the guy. I did the Civil War supers, and just was stunned by how many people completely missed the joke on that.
No, I completely forgot about that. Wow.
Well, you know, it was an odd idea. I'm glad Green Ronin got me to do it, but I don't know. Just people completely seemed what I thought was a fairly obvious joke. Nobody. You know, I mean, to me, it was pretty obvious. You know, the Confederate heroes are loosely based on a certain other famous comic companies who are, you know, sometimes referred to as the Distinguished Competition. And, you know, the Northern heroes are a bit more marvelous. And no one got it. So, I don't know. I guess I got to take the blame on that one.
That's okay. You're talking to a Marvel fan, so, you know. But I love comics in general, so, you know, just to smooth that
good.
Over. Are there any upcoming projects that you can talk about?
I dearly wish that I could. I can say that Eminem is getting ready to do something very, 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 very exciting, but if I said any more, then, you know, black helicopters would land outside both our houses, and neither one of us would ever be heard from again.
No, no, and, you know, we don't want that, definitely. We want to be able to buy said.
Exactly. All I can say is all I can say 2010 is a very, very, very exciting year for Eminem, and anybody who's had any degree of affection for the game, get a helmet. Your mind is about to be blown, and I have to stop there.
Excellent. Okay, that's a good teaser there.
Yeah. Still, Silver Age is the appetizer for what's going to be a great, great meal of gaming awesomeness.
Oh man. Now, are there any kind of dream products out there that you would love to work on?
Like dream. I would love to work on. You know, I think every single author has like their crazy little setting that you know, they can barely just describe to anybody else because it's so personal and so trapped in their own head.
Sure.
And, you know, unfortunately for some people, a lot of them take, you know, their inheritance or their college fund and they go and self-publish it and learn the hard way. I remember, I won't say the game that he was talking about, but Chris Pramus saw one of these, a booth dedicated to this type of game, and he described it as, it's Nishville, population, you. You know, that's pretty much your audience. So, you know, I guess I've got everybody else. I've got sort of a dystopian sci-fi superhero thing I've been working on since I was 12. And to me, it's the coolest thing in the world. But, you know, having had some other people learn some bitter lessons for me, I have this terror that, you know, everybody else is going to look at it and go, you wrote that when you were 12, didn't you?
Yeah, well, yes, I did.
So, yeah, you know, maybe it's best kept within my own skull. You know, it may be one of those things that works better as a dream than a reality. But, you know, in the meantime, Eminem keeps me quite challenged, and, you know, we're certainly not out of fun things we can do with that with that system yet. So,
no,
we'll see.
It sounds like it's doing very well, which is fantastic, I think. So.
Oh, yes. We continue to be amazed at the legs this thing has. And
I know, for one, don't want to see it going anywhere. So.
Well, rest assured, Eminem has a long, long life ahead of it, unless, you know, something really, you know, asteroid strike or all this 2012 talk really
there is
does.
That, you know. 2012. And really just sort of in the wrapping up phase now, I like to ask everyone, what is it you're playing or running right now, if anything?
What is it I'm running? Unfortunately, right now, we're in the middle of the school year. We just came out of it, and not really a whole lot I can actually be running now. If I could, I'd get a Spirit of the Century game together, like, tomorrow, if I could get, like, a... if I get, like, my evil twin to come in and fill in for me for a little while at work, you know? But as it is, I just look at their book and sigh.
Yes, I understand that. but are you playing anything right now?
Not really had much of an opportunity. The nearest game I know of is in Alexandria, and it's like an hour haul one way.
Oof.
And my, you know, my 95 model teacher mobile, you know, it's a little less excited about that drive than I would be.
Yeah, so. I could get you on that one. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, again, it's like, there's a story that, at the end of his life, Bob Hope, always such a great golfer, towards the end of his life, he couldn't actually get out and play, but he would just sit with a putter in his lap.
Sure.
And I feel like that's kind of where I am in my life. I'm sitting there with my dice bag in my hand, yes. As close as I can get to it these days.
Excellent. And one last thing I want to talk about real quick, even if we reiterate a little bit, one of the things that the Gamers Haven likes to do is really, like I said, broaden the knowledge about gaming in general and how much of a wonderful hobby it is. What is it about gaming that you love? Why is it that you spend so much time and effort in this hobby?
Well, I think most of us are born with a creative urge, and with some of us, it gets into painting. Some of us, it's music. But, for me, it's just always being able to make up just really, really, really wild, off-the-wall stuff. And, for better or for worse, I've just always had this out-of-control imagination. And when I first got into gaming, it's like, wow, here's a framework that I can actually pin these crazy notions running around in my head into a format that I can use to entertain others. And just being able to harness such a big part of my being and have others, seemingly entertained by it, that's just great. It's almost like, wandering around, you're spending your life as a hammer, and then you finally get to hit your first nail. Like, hey, this is what I was meant to do. This is fun. Now I kind of know what I'm all about. So gaming it's filled that need to be creative in my life, and it's saved me, I guess, from being one of those guys that just kind of wanders around talking to themselves. I guess maybe me as a GM and just crazy homeless guys, we're entertaining in the same way, but just, hey, with dice, it just seems a lot saner, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, that's what it's been. It's always filled that great niche in my life. And, doing it in the writing part of it now, instead of like the 6 or 8 people sitting around a table, now I have, maybe as many as, 20 people, buying my stuff and reading it and, just reaching that much bigger audience with those same crazy notions. It's a rush. It really is. It's just such a delight, when, you get it. From New Zealand. Hey, love your books. Wow. Yes. Fantastic. It's unbeatable. Really, really just amazing.
I could see where that would just be fantastic. We get some emails on occasion from people listening to us in South Africa or something like that. So,
isn't that great?
It is. And I think, in your shoes especially, you put that book out there and there's a bit of a delay and getting anything back on it, and it's just I've always found that this hobby is just just got a lot of good people in it. So
that too, the people that I've met, just from buying my books and meeting the people who write them. Honestly, some of the just the most wonderful, amazingly talented people that you would ever want to meet. It just seems just something about gaming just seems to draw these people like a magnet.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we're going to wrap it up with that. I want to thank you, Chris, for taking the time out of your busy schedule to talk to me and talk to the Gamers Haven.
Well, thank you for letting me ramp for an hour.
Anytime. We're always happy to we're always happy to talk to people, especially if they're working on superhero stuff. But that's just my point of view. So
Oh, thank you.
But thanks again.
You've been listening to the Gamers Haven Podcast. Subscribe to the show by visiting our website at gamershavenpodcast.com, where you can also discuss all things gaming in our forum, drop us an email, or just peruse our episode archives. You can also call us toll-free and leave a message to be played on the show by dialing 1-877-416-1270. That's toll-free, 877-416-1270. On our website, you'll also find our actual play podcasts chronicling our misadventures through all things role-playing. Enjoy what you hear? Why not support the Gamers Haven by purchasing Gamers Haven merchandise, visiting our affiliates, or just by clicking on our donate button? The Gamers Haven podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial, Share alike, 3.0 United States license, some rights reserved. Some music in this podcast is used with permission of Joe Hero Band at joehero.com. This is a Thousand Monkeys production.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.